I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KrisAnneHall.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. Today's show is a very important show. Today's show is an illustration of how Americans need to think every single day. This show is not just your average trending talking points. You know that. That's why you're here. This show is about taking current events and shining the light of liberty on them. Most of the time, we're teaching about constitutional provisions and constitutional principles. But I want us to remember that these constitutional provisions, these constitutional principles, are all rooted in a single principle, the principle of liberty, deriving from natural law. And so we have to learn that these principles that we are applying, these liberty principles that we are applying on a national scale, also must be applied on a local scale. And I mean to the smallest parts of government, even down to your homeowners association. Your homeowners association, in order to be a just and right governing body, because they are governing over you, right? You realize that, don't you? Every time your neighbor on the homeowners association board comes and measures your grass with a ruler, okay, that's governing over you. Every time they tell you what color you can build your paint your house and where you can put your fence and how you can plant your trees, they're governing over you. And if you're going to have a just governing body in your homeowners association, they need to be, and you need to be, liberty-minded. Liberty is not something that is to be preserved just on the national level. Liberty is to be preserved on all levels of government. And that's something that I hope to really, really sink in here. I ingrain in the psyche of America. John Adams said, liberty must at all hazards be supported. Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. And they were talking about on all levels of government. That's why our state constitutions were written as they were. That's why it's very interesting to understand that the U.S. Constitution was an adaptation of state constitutions which had first preserved liberty. Not all state constitutions were the best at preserving liberty. So what they did was they compared. Go read the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. Go read the debates. They actually compared the state constitutions and chose the most liberty-minded pieces to put them together to become our U.S. Constitution. The most limited forms of government in its most successful form out of each of our state constitutions to create the essential liberty platform, the foundation of our constitutional republic. Now, in today's class, if you will, we're going to be discussing, as I told my assistant this morning, we're going to be talking about God and guns. Okay? So these are two things that we need to be not just simply concerned about on the federal level, but on a state and local level as well, because freedom of religion is not a federal assault. Freedom, assault on your freedom of religion can happen on all levels of government. Your right to keep and bear arms is not something that you get from the Second Amendment. Your right to keep and bear arms is an essential element to your right to self-preservation, which Samuel Adams explained is derived from the first law of nature. Because you see, if you don't have a right to self-preservation, whether that be attack from a foreign government, whether that attack be from a robber, a rapist, whether that attack be from your own government, you have an essential, natural right to self-preservation. And as a natural right, we must protect it in all levels of governing. A greatest gift, you've heard me say this over and over again, the greatest gift that our founders gave us was the opportunity to self-govern. And here we have America. Man, I'm just trying to think throughout my studies of history. We have America existing now in the least expression of self-governance that we have, I don't know, perhaps that America has ever seen. The least expression of self-governance. Think about this. As we spoke before, some of the most tyrannical governing bodies in America are these homeowners associations, which is quite ironic because they ought to be the least tyrannical. Because you see, the smaller the governing body, the easier time the people have to control that governing body. And that's the way it's supposed to work. But we have the smallest governing body that we can imagine, this homeowners association, governing in the most tyrannical ways. This would apply to your city and your county as well. We know about our friends in all over America who are battling with city councils and county commissions. Come on now, we have people going to jail for collecting rainwater in Florida. A lady was threatened with jail time for living off the grid. How can we live in such conditions when our opportunity for self-governance is so great? And I've got this little philosophy that if we cannot control even the smallest parts of government, what business do we have trying to control the federal government? I mean, seriously, if you can't keep your homeowners association under control, then you better not even phone bank about your U.S. congressman. Because you see, we've got to learn these lessons at home. We've got to learn how to control government in the small places, if we have any hope of ever controlling them in the large places. And so the two circumstances that we are going to cover today, fall under the category of God and guns. The first one has to do with a case that is going to the Supreme Court. I'm going to show you why this should never even be going to the Supreme Court to begin with. Not only that, I want to show you why this case should never even be happening. This is a case of Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia, Missouri, suing the state of Missouri for taxpayer-funded grants. The other story we're going to cover today is the gun story. This is a proposed piece of legislation in the state of Texas, mind you, to limit gun carry and to control the governance of the church and to control the ability of the people to exercise that essential right of self-preservation. And it's very interesting because both of these cases have to do with guns. Or, I'm sorry, both of these cases have to do with the church. One has to do with religious liberty. The other one has to do with freedom to defend yourself. Both of these are government intruding on the governance of the church. The first situation, quite ironically, is Trinity Lutheran begging the government to intrude in the governance of their church. Actually suing the government so that they will intrude, regulate, and govern the operation of the church. The second, this legislation in Texas, are conservative Republicans creating legislation to insert government regulation into the body of the church. I look through history, even our most recent history, and I wonder, why is it that some of the most bold and brazen attacks on liberty come as soon as we get a Republican majority in government? We have to ask ourselves, why is that? I mean, seriously, go look at the Republican Party platform that was adopted in 2016. You read that Republican Party platform that was adopted in 2016, you will not believe how amazing this is. You can't believe how amazing this is. Constitutionally minded, state sovereignty focused, liberty-minded. It's not perfect. There's still some big government slid in there. But nonetheless, I believe this is the best Republican Party platform I have become aware of. And here we have a situation where once again, not just on the federal level, but on the state level, Republicans defying religious liberty, Republicans defying freedom to defend yourselves for self-preservation. Remember, it was the Republicans that gave us the Patriot Act. It was the Republicans that gave us the indefinite detention provisions of NDAA. Perhaps this is something that we really need to start thinking about. Start thinking about being a liberty-minded people. Well, I hope that's something that we can start today, we can inspire today, and something that we can make happen today.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back. We're talking about being liberty focused. We're talking about having a liberty focused government. And that's not going to happen unless we become a liberty focused people. And that means a liberty focused people on all sides of government. A liberty focused people in all realms of government. And if we are going to live in a society where political parties are running government, then we must make sure that as a liberty-minded people, we are requiring our political parties to be liberty-focused as well. And as we pointed out before the break, we have an issue here where we have some of the greatest assaults on our liberty coming forward through Republican administration. The Republican majority brought us the Patriot Act, the NDAA. It was a Republican representative from the state of Texas that brought forward the Smith Modernization Act, a legislative act that repealed a law prohibiting the federal government from using tax dollars to create federally focused propaganda to influence the American people. It was a Republican who repealed that prohibition. And now our tax dollars are being used by the federal government to create federal propaganda they know will be used to influence American people. I mean, that's straight up communism. We have the Republican majority giving us the Food Safety Modernization Act. We have the Republican Party giving us these things that, according to their platform, they should be morally, politically, and righteously opposed to. Both of our cases today have to do with churches, quite ironically. We have, in one case, the church suing the government so the church can be regulated by the government. That sounds crazy, doesn't it? But that's exactly what's happening. We have a church suing the government so that the government will regulate the church. And we have Republican, in the other case, we have Republican leadership in the state of Texas trying to push forward legislation that will not only regulate the church, but regulate your ability to exercise your natural right to self-preservation. Let's talk about this now. Let's get right to this. I want to make sure we can cover this as thoroughly as possible. Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia, Missouri is suing the state of Missouri for tax dollars. You see, Trinity Lutheran Church operates a preschool in Missouri. And in 2012, Trinity Lutheran Church applied for a playground resurfacing grant from the state of Missouri. This is all coming from the ADF website. Obtaining a grant, they say, ADF says, would allow Trinity to receive reimbursement for resurfacing its playground by the state government. So they're going to put a pour-in-place rubber surface made from recycled tires, and the state will reimburse them for that cost. ADF tells us that the state awarded 14 grants that year. But while Trinity's application was ranked 5th out of 44, the church was denied these tax dollars. The state officials determined that because of Missouri's state establishment clause, they were forbidden to take tax dollars and give those tax dollars to a religious organization or a religious operation. Trinity Lutheran in Columbia, Missouri is suing the state of Missouri to force them to give them this money. Now, this may sound good on the surface. This lawsuit may sound good initially because, remember, we have not been teaching the right things for a very long time. We have not been focused on the right liberty focus for a very long time. We have been led and deceived and brainwashed into having an entitlement mentality. And now that entitlement mentality is seeping into the body of our churches. Government entitlement in our church body. It's never too late to change your life. So don't let them steal your life. Don't let them break your stride.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
We are making sure that we are being liberty focused and not entitlement focused. I don't know about you, but it's very, very disturbing to me that this entitlement mentality has not only seeped into our conservative mentality, but it has seeped into the body of the church. Because many people will look at this lawsuit and say, well, of course the state should give this money to the church. Of course they should. Those people in that church pay taxes. Those people in that church are entitled to those tax dollars. If we're giving out tax dollars, then we ought to be entitled to receive them. See? That's one of the problems with government-led charity, isn't it? It no longer becomes a gift. It no longer remains a charity. It always converts into an entitlement. Well, I pay my taxes. I'm entitled to this charity. Anybody think that's wrong? Anybody see the disconnect there? Anybody else see how that's just not working the way it ought to work? I mean, if it's charity, then it should be distributed based upon need, not based upon entitlement. We should not have lawsuits forcing government to give people things. We should have government not in charity at all. I mean, if we're going to be liberty-minded about this. Charity is the job of the individual. Charity, if you want to get real correct, is the job of the church. And we have to adopt these liberty-minded principles, because if we don't, we're actually destroying religious liberty. Do we realize how this lawsuit is going to destroy religious liberty in the state of Missouri? The mentality that says the state must provide religious organizations with tax funding will destroy religious liberty. It's why the state was established to begin with this provision that says tax dollars can't go to churches. It wasn't to deprive a church or a people of something they're entitled to. It was a preservation of liberty in the church. It was to keep the government from regulating the church, because we must understand that every time government money is given, strings are attached. Every time government money is received, you are required to comply with government mandates. And when we strip away all the emotion, when we strip away all the entitlement from this particular case, what we end up seeing here is a church suing the state for the opportunity to be regulated by the state, increasing government regulation on the church. Can't happen, won't happen, doesn't happen. Is that what you're hearing? I mean, are people even talking about this? Are people even discussing these things? You know, this is not just Missouri, mind you. We had this issue come up in Florida as well. In the state of Florida, and most states have these provisions within their state constitution, within their state law, that says, hey, government money, taxpayer dollars, cannot fund religious activities. It's not to deprive the churches. It is to secure the separation of government regulation from your church. It came several years ago under the guise of a constitutional amendment in the state of Florida. Amendment 8, it was called. And they actually titled it Religious Liberty or something like that. Well, I live in Florida. I recognized what this was. And we started a full-on campaign to educate people on how this amendment, this entitlement mentality seeping into the churches, this tax-controlled money going into our churches would destroy religious liberty. And we were fortunately able to defeat this constitutional amendment. By the way, because I believe we had such an impact on defeating this piece of legislation. Do you know there's an entire denomination, an entire religious denomination in the state of Florida who issued a memorandum to all their church leadership that says, I'm not allowed to come and teach in their churches. Even if I'm not representing the church or teaching the congregation, they're not allowed to let their facilities be used for my teaching. Because I kept government money out of their churches, they said. See, this is how deceived we have become. We need to break free from that deception. We need to break free from the chains of entitlement and this insane driving force for more and more government control. So if we're going to be liberty-minded about this, we need to see what's really going to happen. If Trinity Lutheran Church wins this lawsuit, and it's going to the Supreme Court, mind you. If Trinity Lutheran Church wins this lawsuit, then we have some issues here. And Trinity Lutheran Church and every other church who takes part in the victory of this, and I'm saying this with little quotation marks, right? Victory. And takes part in this entitlement grab from tax dollars. They must be willing to accept the strings. This is not my interpretation. This is not my application. This is precedent. This is proven history that tax dollars always come with regulatory strings. Just ask any church or religious organization that has a food bank. Did you know that the USDA hands out tons and tons of food every single day to charitable organizations? The USDA handing out thousands of pounds of food to religious organizations that have food banks. Ask those people who have those food banks what these government regulations are doing to their efforts. You see, the USDA several years ago revised regulations regarding food distribution because of the food that is going to religious food banks. You see, these religiously based food banks, church-run food banks, religious organization food banks, were handing out this food that they were receiving from the FDA, but they were also praying with the people who are coming to get their food. And the USDA said, whoa, wait a minute. You can't do that. You can't pray here while you're giving out this food. Because you see, this is food paid for by taxpayers, which means your organization must comply with federal regulations of not establishing religion or promoting religion. Because you are taking tax-funded money of food, you're not allowed to pray. I mean, we've had food banks who have said, no, we're not going to take USDA food anymore because we want to keep praying. Bethesda Mission in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, according to CNS News, is one of those places. We pray before meals. So if there's a meal being served, we serve 3,000 meals a week. If there's a meal being served with USDA food somewhere in it, then we would be prohibited from praying. This is a directive from the USDA. This has been this way for years now. If you receive taxpayer-funded food, you can't pray. And so Bethesda Mission in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania said, you know, we may feed less people, but we're still going to pray. We're not going to take this USDA money or their food. Listen to what Michael Cromarty, vice president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. He said, if this food or money was coming from a Christian charity to a religious organization, there would be no problem with praying. But the government money comes with attachments. I want to repeat that so we can really hear that. Government money, he says, comes with attachments. And you have to follow the rules if you are going to take the money. I just hope that Trinity Lutheran Church, I hope that the people at ADF, I hope the body of the church has been informed that if they take this state money, they're going to have to comply with state rules. Rules and regulations. If they take this state money, that means now that the state will be able to come into their church, into their daycare, and ensure that they have, proper sprinkler systems, proper doorways, proper access, proper insurance. All of these regulations that are heightened under government-funded entities will now be applied not just to the daycare, but to the church itself, because, you know, the playground will be used by the people who are attending the church, right? Are they going to lock the playground so that during church services and church functions, nobody can use it? Is it going to be completely sealed off and only used for the daycare? Because if not, now the church is going to be suffer all of these rules and regulations as well. Not only that, what about the rule and regulation that if you take government money, you can't pray? Government money must have equal access to what the money was provided for. So now the church is going to have to open its doors and allow everybody to play on the playground, right? So they can't reserve this playground to Christian activities. They can't pray on the playground. They can't have Christian symbols on the playground. They must open their playground to Muslims and atheists and to Satanists, and they need to be able to do whatever they want to do on the playground too. This is not an invention of mine. This is precedent. I'm showing it to you as a matter of law and regulation.
My right to tote the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your old man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So being liberty-minded, would say, hey, Trinity Lutheran Church. We don't need taxpayer dollars. We have God. We don't need taxpayer dollars. We can do fundraisers and we can collect these things. We can do this on our own because, you see, we don't need the government telling us when, where, and how we can pray. We don't need the government telling us who can have access to our facilities and who cannot have access to our facilities. Let me read to you what is happening with a food pantry issue that arose in Gleaners Food Bank of Indiana. You see, the Gleaners spokeswoman said, the guidelines are no religious activity or teaching can be required for providing services. And because many of the food pantries have ties to churches, the state suggested to faith-based operations that they offer brochures or establish a separate room for prayer while complying with regulations. What does that mean to a church who is running a daycare that is now going to accept tax dollars, literally embedded into the soil of their church are tax dollars, and every other encroachment that comes will be embedded into the land of this church? And they're going to be told, you cannot pray with your kids at this daycare. It, it, It's not that far of a leap. It's a direct application. State dollars for food pantries, you can't pray. State dollars for a playground, you can't pray. Now, we have food banks that are refusing the state dollars now, the federal dollars now, and saying, you know, we're just going to pray. But how is Trinity Lutheran going to refuse that now? Once they get that money, once that playground is in and they have that money, how are they going to find, what are they going to do when they find out the state says, I'm sorry, you can't pray at your daycare. You must remove all religious symbols from your daycare. Any child that it gets to play on that playground cannot see religious symbols. They cannot be prayed with because we must have equal access to taxpayer funded things. Equal access. What are we doing here, people? What is Trinity Lutheran going to do then? They will either have to comply, or they will have to sell their building and stop being a church there, or they will have to refuse to comply and then pay back the state for the money that they used to that they received from the state. If the state will allow them to even do that. These are the most, I mean, this is not just a food bank, people. These are permanent strings. These are permanent strings. I don't even think they could dig up the surface and start over and remove the strings because the money was spent whether the surface is there or not. This is permanent servitude to the state. For this church. And I'm just wondering, have they thought this all the way through? Has somebody explained to them these ramifications? When I worked for the Christian Law Association, that was my job, to explain to churches like Trinity, if you take this money, you must be willing to take the rules and the regulations that come along with this. And they will come. They will come. It is proven. Look it up. Anytime you get this money, there are always, you know that. Why am I even wasting my time telling you this? Not only that, we have an issue now that this is going to the Supreme Court of the United States. The Supreme Court of the United States is going to determine whether the state of Missouri must fund a religious organization within the state of Missouri. Can we look now at Article 3 of the Constitution? Article 3 of the Constitution is what delegates the authority to the Supreme Court of the United States. And I want us to look through the delegated authority of the Supreme Court of the United States so we can determine whether the Supreme Court even has jurisdiction over this matter. Because I'm going to suggest to you, and we're going to come back after the break, I'm going to show you, the Supreme Court does not even have jurisdiction in this matter. This is a state court issue.
We are the light of the world. We got a light, light, light it up now. Oh, we came to light it up.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the second half of the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here. As always, KRISANNEHALL.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. This show, remember, is about God, it is about guns, and we spent the first half of our show today talking about how Trinity Lutheran Church is suing the state of Missouri in order to get taxpayer dollars to fund a resurfacing of their playground. Trinity Youth Lutheran Church actually suing the state of Missouri, inviting government regulation into their church, begging. They're actually going to force the state government to regulate their church and their facility. I mean, after we've looked at all these facts, after we've looked at the precedent and how this is going to this taxpayer dollars and these regulations going to be applied, how can anybody even think this is a reasonable thing to do? Now, this case has gone to the Supreme Court of the United States. The Supreme Court is going to be rendering an opinion on this matter, but we got to ask ourselves, does the Supreme Court even have jurisdiction over this matter? Article 3 of the Constitution governs the authority of the Supreme Court of the United States. It lists specifically the authority of the Supreme Court of the United States. So let's read through this. It's going to be a little bit long, but let's go through because, okay, before we read it, let's do it this way. What we need to find in Article 3, Section 2, Clause 1, which lists out the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court of the United States, what we need to find is jurisdiction where the Supreme Court can intervene in a case where a citizen of the state is suing its own state. That's what's happening. We have Trinity Lutheran Church of Missouri suing the state of Missouri. So in order for the Supreme Court to have jurisdiction over this matter, the Supreme Court must have jurisdiction over cases arising within the state through a citizen of the state against its own state. So let's read here. Judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. Semicolon. Now let's pause there for just 1 second, because a lot of problem that we have with this adopted judicial supremacy mentality that we have is a problem in reading. Excuse me, I'm sitting on my microphone. Okay, is a problem in reading. And many of the judicial supremacists will read this part of Clause 1 incompletely and assert that the Supreme Court has an unlimited authority. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity, they'll say. And then stop there. But that's not what it says. In all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. So we're talking about cases in law and equity that come through the Constitution itself. Article 1, Article 2, Article 4, Article 5, Article 6, Article 7. Anything that is arising within this Constitution, okay, that is the limitation. If it is not specifically enumerated in the body of the Constitution, then it is not in this aspect of judicial power. It does not fall under all cases, just all cases in this realm. Now, it's not just the laws of the United States, but it's the laws of the United States and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. Do you see how we keep returning to the standard of the Constitution? What laws are made under the authority of Congress? What treaties are made or will be made under the authority of the of Congress and the president? Under their authority. What is over their authority? The Constitution is over their authority. Their authority is under the Constitution. Therefore, any law, any treaty made that is not under the authority of the Constitution is no law at all. James Madison explained that in Federalist 78. Alexander Hamilton, the big government guy, explained that in Federalist 78. If you like homework, if you like to go on and research more after these shows, then go pick up Federalist 78, because Alexander Hamilton is very, very clear that laws and treaties that are made outside the authority of the Constitution are no law at all. They don't need the Supreme Court to overturn them. They simply exist as no law at all. And then Hamilton gives us a warning that says, if you allow them to be law, He doesn't say if the Supreme Court allows them to be law. He doesn't say if the president acts as if they are law, or if Congress deems them to be law. He says, if you allow them to be law, then you will be a slave. Those are his words, not mine. And so we have to understand that even the authority of the judiciary exists under the Constitution. The judiciary is not above the Constitution. The judiciary is not equal with the Constitution. The authority of the judiciary, as stated right here in the words of the Constitution itself, is under the authority of the Constitution. So, we haven't heard anything about states having lawsuits brought against the state by its people. So, continuing now with the language, it says, to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, and consuls, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party. Let's look at this. In Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia versus Missouri, is the United States a party in this contract? No. To controversies between two or more states. Does this controversy go outside of the state of Missouri? No, it does not. Between a state and a citizen of another state. No, Trinity is in Missouri. Between citizens of different states. No, we're talking about citizens and a state within the state. Between citizens of the same state claiming lands under grants of different states. No, we're still dealing all in Missouri. Between a state or the citizens thereof and a foreign state citizen or subjects. Is this Missouri suing Iraq? No. I'm sorry, that's the end of Article 3, Section 1, Section 2, Clause 1. There is no authority delegated to the Supreme Court of the United States to insert itself into cases where a citizen of a state is suing the state it lives in. There's no jurisdiction here. This should be a simple case for the Supreme Court of the United States. This should be a very simple case. They say, you know, I'm sorry, we don't have jurisdiction here. We must refer this to the state courts. And if you don't like the state courts, then you have to fix your state. Because you see, the states are independent and sovereign, and they are to govern themselves in these particular matters. That's how it works. That's why the states are required to be republics, by the way. So that the people will have not only the ability, the opportunity to govern themselves within their states. We did not create an oligarchy of 9 kings and queens to rule over the land of America. We created states, individual, separate, and sovereign, so that the people could govern themselves within their states, reserving specific jurisdiction to the federal government, excluding certain jurisdictions from the federal government. But then, Chrisanne, what do we do if your state becomes tyrannical? I'm sorry, I'm missing that problem. Yes, I agree that your state can become tyrannical. But you're asserting to me that we should give more power to the federal government over our states to prevent our states from becoming tyrannical? Do we not see that more power to the federal government over our states actually gives more power to the federal government to be tyrannical over us with less control? Government everywhere has the potentiality of being tyrannical. You can't stop that. It is the nature of government to seize more power unto itself. And the only check and balance on that is not giving government more power to check and balance itself. It is reserving more power to the people to control their government. And the only way you're going to control your government completely is to keep it at home and keep it small. That's why you have more control over your homeowners association, more control over your city, more control over your county, more control. You have more control over your state than you ever could imagine in the federal government. So what you're telling me is that you need a federal court, that you elected no one in that federal court. You already tell me you cannot control your congressmen who are supposed to be controlling that federal court. The president has no authority over that federal court. Who has authority over that federal court? Judicial supremacists will tell you the only authority over the federal court is the federal court itself. And you're going to tell me that is a greater protection of liberty than keeping this power within the state where the people have control and direct reins? That is illogical. That denies all history. That flies in the face of every principle of liberty. And yet we've become so deceived that we think that the Supreme Court is the ultimate answer to all our problems. The ultimate arbiter of everything right and good and constitutional. And we're actually
my right to tote the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you want, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
I suppose we have to ask ourselves, why? Why do we keep pushing for more federal power and less local power? That's probably a question that we're going to have to answer another day. But the last thing that I'd like for us to take away from this is this truism, this axiomatic truth that we must grab a hold of if we're really, really going to understand what's going on here. The further government gets away from you, the less power you have to control that government. Do you have more control over your county commissioner or the president of the United States? Do you have more control over your state legislator or your federal congressman? Do you have more control over your governor or over the Supreme Court of the United States? This is simply something that is true by all of human nature. The further government gets away, the less power you have. Then, the more power government has. And the more power government has, another axiomatic truth, the more power government has, the less liberty you have. This is why the Constitution was created to make the federal government very limited and very defined, and to make your state authorities' powers, their powers, as James Madison said, are numerous and indefinite. We don't need the Supreme Court to govern over our state courts. We need the people to govern over themselves. And this is how we slipped into this mentality. And because of a lack of education. And now we are sinking. The Supreme Court doesn't have jurisdiction over this case. Period. Unless you're going to allow the Supreme Court. See, that's the funny thing. Well, the Supreme Court said that in matters of religious liberty, because of this, that, or the other, they have jurisdiction over everything. Can we also recognize how ridiculous that is, that the Supreme Court can expand its own power to exercise through its own opinions? And the only way you can overturn a Supreme Court's expansion of its own power? Is to allow the Supreme Court to overturn itself? Or, I've been hearing lately, a constitutional amendment to limit the Supreme Court? Why do we have to amend the Constitution to tell the Supreme Court it can't do something that the Constitution never authorized it to do in the first place? Why do we have to amend the Constitution to tell the Supreme Court you can't invent your own power? I missed that Supreme Court is allowed to invent its own power clause. I just don't get it. James Madison said quite explicitly that the authority of the judiciary can be expanded by the judiciary in a tyrannical manner, in the way that the executive and the legislative can expand their own power. And we are to guard against the judiciary expanding its own power, exercising or sanctioning expansions of power beyond the grant of the Constitution. And he said the greatest guard of that, on two separate occasions that I teach regularly, that it's the state legislators that are that guard over the Supreme Court. If the state legislators are that guard over the Supreme Court, then how in the world can the Supreme Court govern over the state legislators? I'm just saying, it defies logic. Let's look at this piece of legislation by the state of Texas. You see, it's a bill called HB 659. And it is a piece of legislation that is to deal with security officers in religious organizations. There's been a big trend in churches lately that they need to have organized security to keep shooters from shooting in the churches. You know, you've seen them with their vests, security, and they walk around with their sidearms and walkie-talkies. Well, Texas now wants to regulate this aspect of church government.
We are the light of the world. We've got to light it up now. We came to light it up.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Okay, so we are talking about HB 659, and we are talking about this piece of legislation in Texas to govern the state of the churches in the state of Texas on how they operate their protection of their members. Okay, so this section, all right, so let me talk about this from this perspective first. You're going to hear a lot of people say a lot of things about this piece of legislation. You're going to hear people say that this piece of legislation is going to stop you from carrying a gun in church. It does not stop you from carrying a gun in church. But it will. It will put government regulation upon the church if they are to have an organized security entity for the church. You see, anybody who is going to have a security officer or a person who is performing activities described by a security officer will now have to receive, by this, if this legislation passes, a letter of authority. Okay? Now, if your church is going to have a security department, this legislation says you must apply for a permit from the state of Texas to provide a security department for your church. This letter of authority, they say, means a permit issued by the board that entitles the security department of a private business, a religious organization, or a political subdivision to employ a commissioned security officer. This letter of authority is required when the security department of a private business, a religious organization, this is the new edition, a religious organization, or a political subdivision may not employ a commissioned security officer unless the security department holds a letter of authority. So what this saying is your church cannot employ security officers unless you get a permit from the government, which, you know, will accompany regulations from the government to have this paid security department. Now, this piece of legislation is very careful to ensure that you are not required to have off-duty officers. Okay, so in this letter of permit, you cannot be forced to have off-duty government officers fulfilling the security function. You can employ private people to do this. But if you employ private people to do this, you must seek a permit from the state to provide security for the members of your church. Now, in the state of Texas, it is not against the law to carry a gun in church. It is not. By law, you are allowed to carry a gun in church. Many states have outlawed, and I'm doing these little quotation things, outlawed guns in churches. Texas is not one of those states. This piece of legislation will not change that. You will still be allowed, so far, to carry a gun into your church. Let me warn you of a progressive nature of these permits. They always start off with the least imposition as possible. Oh, no, no, no. See, all you really have to do is just apply. We're not going to turn you down. There's not a whole lot of regulation. Just come and apply. We want to make sure that we know which churches have safety groups, and we want to make sure that these security departments have all the resources and training that they need. And we want to have to have a list so that we can offer you those kind of trainings. You see, it's a service to you. It's not an imposition on your liberty. That's the way these permits always start. And then once the permit starts, then you're roped in, right? Well, now in order to keep the permit, you have to do A, B, C, or D. And quite often, by the time you get to D, it will be a matter of, well, since you have a state-sanctioned security department, there will be no reason for your congregation to carry firearms. So as a matter of your licensing, you must post, see, we're not making it against the law to carry a gun in church, but anybody who has a security department would be required to post a sign prohibiting its congregation from carrying firearms into the church unless they are part of the permitted security department. I'm not saying this is part of this legislation. I'm saying that's the progress of legislation like this. It happens this way all the time. You see, if we want to keep these regulations out of our churches, if we want to keep these regulations out of our lives, we have to refuse the entire permit process. Listen to what Samuel Adams said. He said, if we tamely submit to a lawless attack upon our liberty, a permit is a lawless attack upon your liberty. He said, when we tamely submit to a lawless attack upon our liberty, we encourage it. What do we encourage? The lawless attack upon our liberty. This progression of regulation upon our liberties comes through time, the frog in the pot of water, if you will. When we allow these lawless attacks upon our liberty, he says, we encourage them and we involve others in our doom. He said, it's a serious consideration that should weigh heavy upon our hearts that ages and millions yet unborn will be the miserable sharers of our experience. Because you see, the permit process is not the end of the regulation. It is the beginning of the regulation that will span and expand through generations. Think about the progress of gun permitting from the beginning. Think about the progress of driver's licenses from the beginning. Think about the progress of income tax from the beginning, always starting off as a very small and limited imposition upon your liberty. And generations down the road, expansion into full-fledged despotism and denial of liberty. It is now a popular mentality, a common held belief in America, that no one should be able to possess a firearm without first seeking permission from the government. That is completely antithetical to the foundation upon which America was built. And that's how we've come through these progressive regulations that began with, no, we're just trying to keep you safe, and we're just trying to provide you with a service, and we're just trying to help you. No, I'm sorry. Our churches don't need the state's help to keep their congregations safe. This is ridiculous. And Texas, listen to me. You need to stop this. You need to contact your legislators right now, and you need to tell them to make HB 659 fail. North Dakota, Washington, Florida, Missouri, every other state in the union, you must be watching for these pieces of insidious legislation being inserted into your government by Republicans. Do you see this? By Republicans who are supposed to be pro-liberty, pro-gun, telling you cannot protect yourself without government permission is not pro-gun. That is not pro-liberty. One, your natural right. Listen to what Samuel Adams said. Among the natural rights of the colonists are these. These are natural rights of colonists. Shouldn't they also be natural rights of free men in a constitutional republic? Among the natural rights of colonists, people who are subjects to a crown. First, life. Second, liberty. Third, property. Together with the right to protect and defend them in the best means possible. He says these are not deductions from, but derivatives of the first law of nature, our right to self-preservation. If you cannot have autonomy over your life, your liberty, your property, if you cannot protect your property, your life, or your liberty in the best means possible, then you have no right to self-preservation. All of these things, life, liberty, and property, are essential to self-preservation. If you must ask permission to protect your life, your liberty, and your property, then guess what? You are not free. Your life and liberty and your property, you now become a privilege bestowed upon you by the government to be protected at their permission. Or not protected when they refuse to grant permission. What if the state refuses to allow your church a permit to do this? Because that's always the final progression of permitting. We start off little and defined, and then we expand and expand and expand the control, and we expand the limitations on your personal liberty. We expand the limitations of your personal expression of your personal liberty until we come to the point where government then refuses to issue permits. Go check your history. It's how it always works. What happens then when the government refuses to issue a permit to have a security force? Because that's always a possibility now, isn't it? Then the government is telling you, we're revoking your privilege to self-preservation. Your right to defend yourself is not a right, it's a privilege. A privilege that is bestowed by us. What are you going to do then? How's your church going to defend itself then?
Give me my right to vote, my right to tote, the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your own man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So remember our people of Texas. This is House Bill. Oh, I just lost it. House Bill 659. You need to contact your congressman. Tell them no. You must contact Jason Villalba. He's from District 114. Dallas, Texas. Okay. Contact Jason Villalba personally and tell him, you know, we don't need your permission to protect ourselves. We don't need your assistance to protect. For goodness sakes, it's Texas. If y'all don't know how to handle a firearm in Texas, we're America's lost, right? Why do you need Villalba's permission to handle a firearm in your church? Tell him, we don't need your permission to handle a firearm in our church. This is what our churches should be doing anyway. Now, this is not legal advice, okay? This is not legal advice, so all of the trolls, don't get your panties in a wad. I'm not out handing legal advice, okay? Villalba, don't get all crazy. I'm not handing out legal advice. But let me point out a couple facts here for you. Churches in Texas. It is legal for the members of your congregation to carry firearms in your church. Why do you need to have a designated security department? Why don't you just stay silent on the matter? And allow the members of your congregation to carry in the church. And then you can encourage your employees to simply walk around the building and make sure the sinks aren't overflowing and all the bathrooms, the toilets aren't continually running. Make sure all the doors are shut properly so that you're not wasting money on air conditioning and heating costs. You know, look for lights that are turned on and maybe patrol the parking lot to make sure the people haven't left their car lights on or somebody's left their trunk open or their car door open. That sounds crazy. I've done that before. I've walked away and left the car door open. Encourage your staff members to look for these little personal courtesies and money-saving tools for your church. And then, of course, since they're already carrying because they are not prohibited from carrying in the church, they also have the right to exercise their right to self-protection. And by law, they have a right to protect others from an attack and violence. You see, you don't need a designated security team when your entire staff is carrying. You don't need a designated security team when your entire congregation is carrying. And by the way, just from a personal perspective, let's just think about this. Is it safer to let the bad guys know by vest or t-shirt where all the security people are? Or is it safer for the bad guys to wonder which one is the security team? When you have no security team and everybody is carrying, then everybody is a potential security. That's why you never have a massive shooting in a gun show. You never have, you always have these gun assaults in gun-free zones where the government has said, no, you can't carry here. Well, that's where they know the perfect victims are. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. There's nobody going to get back at you. They're not going to randomly pick a church where they know everybody's a potential security agent. Why don't you offer self-defense courses to your congregation as a public service. You know, CPR today, self-defense tomorrow. There are plenty of organizations, private organizations, that would love to come and teach the members of your congregation gun safety. What an amazing concept. Why don't we grab a girl in a gun group to come and teach us how to maintain our firearms? Why don't we get the Appleseed Project to conduct a whole rifle training here on our church property or at a local gun range as a public service? You see, you don't need government permission to exercise your rights. What you need are to know what your rights are and to exercise them daily. Stand against government regulation so our children will be free. Stand against government regulation so we can have liberty-minded government. God bless. See you.